what I want to say very briefly is a couple of things to help us who are mad with a self-chosen madness, raving while we reason. Something Vincent Rossi brought up very briefly last time he gave a talk was the three giants. These are the three passions that without them, nothing else really has any hold. And they are ignorance, forgetfulness, and sloth. And if you read this in Mark the Ascetic, this is written to, like, you know, the Olympic athletes of the spiritual life, which I am not. So I can't explain very much about that to you. But I can explain about the kindergarten version of it. So I will do that. You know, ignorance isn't mainly like not knowing things with the brain. It's not knowing the word of God. The word allogos is... Aloga were like the irrational beasts, the ones who had no word, had no reason. And that was a word that often got leveled at sinful people. They're aloga, alogos. And in the Christmas services, you see this all the time about Christ comes into the manger of their irrational beasts, the logos. Comes as food to the wordless, to the ones who have no logos. And so the basic problem isn't that I haven't read the Bible enough, that I don't have a theological education. The basic problem is I don't know the logos. I don't know God the Word. And we do, as baptized believers, know him to some degree, but then we turn our backs on him. And so, to dispel that ignorance in the deepest sense, you know, St. Mark the Ascetic is talking about how you descend into your heart and how you know the light of knowledge there. Most of us aren't there, and if you're there, I can't help you because I'm not there. But what I do know that we need to do is if we don't know the Word in our hearts the way we should, then we need to know him where we can know him. We need to know him through reading the Scripture. We need to know him through coming to church. We need to know him through listening to the words and following the examples of the people who do know him better. Then there's forgetfulness. Okay, so there's ignorance. And then there's, like, I know I should love God, but, yeah, you know, this cookie looks so good right now, and I forget God. Or, yeah, I know I should love God, but I can't believe he did this. And, you know, and then everything pops out of my mind. And so, and this is probably the one thing that, if you don't remember anything else from this, and the sisters probably know what I'm going to say because, like, this is like, right? What am I going to say? Be thankful, yes. That's like my cure-all for everything. But it is. I was just saying this to a couple of you the other day. So have you ever had one of these days where you get to the end of the day and you throw yourself on your bed and you say, everything went wrong today? Yeah? So you know what that would look like? Well, it would look like nothing at all, because you'd have no eyes, you'd have no brain, gravity would have stopped, there would be no air. The day before, we would have been taken over by militant extremist Muslims. You know, and so for us to have a really rotten day, 99.999% of everything has to go right. But you never think about it, because you've never seen it go wrong. You know, it's like, so when's the last time you thank God for gravity? But we would be having a really hard time having this conversation if gravity happened to be stopping working right now, right? You know, and so thankfulness it's absolutely key to seeing the universe the way it really is. Because if 99.999% of everything is always going right, then that 0.0001%, either God, you know, wasn't watching when that happened, or he is the loving God who allows that so that we can come to our senses, so that we can not be allogos anymore, so that we cannot be without the word while we're tootling along having fun with his creation and forgetting the one who made it and who is in it, in every part of it. And related to this, then, is sloth. It's like, I know I should do this, I remember I do it, but I'm just tired. Well, we need help. So the thing I would suggest to you, make sure you've got accountability. You're not going to remember to be thankful if you don't have somebody to be accountable to. I guarantee you. I mean, you might last a day, you might last 2 days, you might last a week, but it's not going to work unless you have someone to be accountable to. So from a practical viewpoint, those of us who, you know, we're not particularly bipolar or schizophrenic or OCD or anything, but we're just insane the way we are in our sin. For ignorance, do what you can to be near the word, you know, in the sacraments, in the services, in holy people. For forgetfulness, make a point of being thankful. And for sloth, find someone who knows what you're doing and be accountable to them. And if this is all very depressing to you, it's like, oh my goodness, what you've just told me is I'm in worse shape than, you know, than a paranoid schizophrenic. Yeah, you are. It's true. You are. However, and I am too. However, as long as we keep fighting, there's hope. St. John Chrysostom, in the Ephesians passage, you know, about wrestling not with flesh and blood, but with principalities and powers, he says this: he that wrestles is still held fast, but it is enough for him that he has not fallen. When we depart hence, then, and not till then, will the glorious victory be achieved. For instance, take the case of some evil lust. The extraordinary thing would be not even to entertain it, but to stifle it. If, however, this be not possible, then, though we may have to wrestle with it and retain it to the last, yet if we depart still wrestling, we are conquerors. So, you know, you're going to be struggling with these three giants the rest of your life. As saints, you may get to the point where you conquer them. If you're not saints, you may, you know, get really bloodied every day. But if you just keep getting up, then that is the hope for you. I could go on in a somewhat different context, but I think I'll just... It's actually 5 o'clock, so I actually will stop here. And if there's any questions, if I'm amazed and everyone's going, what's she talking about?
Yeah. I did have one question.
Yeah.
About asking the demons to possess me. Why wouldn't they ask the Lord to heal them?
Well, first of all, they didn't ask the demons to possess them.
Okay.
They asked to be possessed. I mean, they weren't asking the demons anything, because
okay.
you don't want to ask demons stuff. Yeah, don't mess with demons. Yeah.
That'd be insane.
That would be. But the thing is that they understood that the kind of possession that we live with day in and day out is a worse thing. And it's only a person who really understands that can safely do such a thing. You know, because if I did such a thing, I don't know what would happen to me, but I don't want to find out. You know, but I'm not sane enough to do such a thing. But the point of the story is simply that we have a skewed version of reality. You know, what we think is so bad isn't. And you know, one thing I didn't really get into here, but another thing you could, is, you know, we look at things like, you know, this person is an alcoholic, and this person is a compulsive gambler, and, you know, isn't that awful? And there's actually, if any of you read The Mountain of Silence, okay, well, there's this great story in The Mountain of Silence, where there's this alcoholic priest, and he's so addicted that he can't even stay sober during the liturgy. So, of course, you know, his people are up in arms, you know, like, this horrible, disgusting, horrible priest, you got to get rid of him. So, that, you know, they go to the bishop, and the bishop, laicizes him. And then the bishop starts getting this dream of these people whom he'd never seen before, who are saying, why did you take our priest away? Give him back. And I think the first night he thinks he ate something, you know. But then it happens again. So then he calls the priest and he says, what have you been doing? And the priest, you know, he's humble and he's like, well, I mean, you know what I've been doing. I've been drinking. And he goes, no. I mean, there's these people that I've never seen them before, and they're not your parishioners, but they're furious at me, saying, why'd you take up my priest away, or to priest away? And he said, well, you know, what I do, because I have no hope for myself, I go to the cemetery, and I pray for the dead. And the bishop, because he was a wise bishop, knew that the alcoholism wasn't that big of a thing. And what that had done in that man was made him very humble. Now, I'm sorry to tell you that if I had no hope for myself, I couldn't imagine having love for anybody else. I'm not that nice. You know, but that guy was amazing. You know, in his alcoholism, which had brought him down in the eyes of the world, he had become like a towering example of love and humility. Because, you know, think about it. I mean, if you're a priest and you're an alcoholic and you have so much trouble with your alcoholism that you can't even stay sober in this liturgy, then you're going to become one of two things. You know, you're going to become either exceedingly bitter or exceedingly humble. And so what this did, you know, it really changed our view of who's doing well. You know, and this is actually something, in the Ladder of Divine Ascent, you see this a lot, but I just never really paid attention to it. But, you know, he'll be going around saying, like, okay, you know, there's whatever this particular virtue is he's talking about. And he'll say, some people have this by nature, but they don't get a crown. And then they'll go to the next virtue. And some people have this by nature, but they don't get a crown. You know, and it's like, so I might be the kind of person who, you know, doesn't get mad very easily, but I don't get a crown for it. But, you know, if you're the kind of person that you spend your whole day trying not to chop people's heads off, you know, if you succeed 1,000 times not to chop someone's head off, and once or twice you say a mean word, who's doing better, you or somebody that, you know, is tempted once every 5 years to say something mean, and every time they're tempted, they say it? Really? You know, and so what this showed us was that we misunderstood reality. The things that we think were big aren't that big, you know, because humility and love are the two great virtues. And some people become saints, and they get there through whatever way they get there. But some people get through to humility and love by having minor passions that God leaves there. And see, we're so crazy that we don't know the difference between a minor passion and a major passion. And so we look at the person who's a compulsive gambler, we look at the person who's an alcoholic, And we go, you know, what a loser. But who did Jesus have the harsh words for? You know, it wasn't even the harlots. You know, it was the Pharisees. It was the ones who had a self-chosen madness, the ones who were raving while they reasoned, you know. And that's what we have to watch out for in our own lives. And that's what we learned, and it just totally changed how we looked at the world. And anything else?
And there's a lot more to talk about.
There is, yeah. I mean, it goes on and on. But anyway.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. All right.